From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
We're fast approaching Jim Chalmers' third budget, which will be brought down on May 14 amid continuing cost of living pressures on ordinary Australians. This week's figures showed annual inflation abating from 4.1% to 3.6%, but still a considerable problem, especially in the area of services. Inflation rose 1% in the March quarter. We already have plenty of hints about the budget, which will have as its centrepiece those rejigged tax cuts. There will be help for industry under the government's new Future Made in Australia policy. The budget will also have some extra cost of living relief, but the Treasurer stresses it will be modest, so as not to drive up inflation. He's previously flagged that energy costs are one area where something is expected to be done. For young people, student debt and the financial difficulties students face on courses such as nursing and teaching when they have to do placements are being looked at. And it would be surprising if there was not also something for those on welfare payments in the budget. Today we're joined by independent economist Chris Richardson to talk about both the budget and the broader economic context. Chris Richardson, Jim Chalmers has just been in Washington, and this week he made much of the downgrades for growth in China and some other countries, although not the US, where growth is expected to rise. He's stressing international uncertainty as a background to this budget. But is he over-egging the outlook to manage expectations? Or is the international background, in fact, a real problem for the budget?
It is a problem for the budget, but yes, he is over-egging those risks to manage expectations. In particular, he's pointed out downgrades to Japan and the UK and risks in China. He's not pointed out that the US is looking better than expected. And he's coming back from Washington, those meetings in Washington of the International Monetary Fund. The IMF itself said the world economy is looking remarkably resilient. The IMF has revised up its expectations for the world economy. So, yeah, you know, there are challenges, but he's the Treasurer has got very much an eye on local considerations and managing expectations.
Well, let's talk about China in particular. It's, of course, greatly helped Australia's growth over a long period. Where is it now and what are the implications for the budget?
So China is struggling. To be fair, it's still doing okay and in many ways better than expected. The key bit of China's economy that is the weakest is property, construction in general, real estate in particular, house and apartment prices starting to fall, certainly construction of housing falling. And because Australia sells to construction, we sell the coal and the iron ore that goes to make the steel that goes into construction, that is a problem for us. The flip side is China's putting money into manufacturing of things like electric vehicles. And so far, something like iron ore prices, we're very dependent on that. Yes, they have fallen, and the Treasurer is mentioning that. What he isn't mentioning is that iron ore prices are still higher than was assumed in the budget update we got ahead of Christmas.
And how's Australia going compared to other countries? Jim Chalmers hasn't yet given us an expected growth figure. Will that be downgraded, do you think, in the budget from the December forecast of 2.25% for the coming financial year?
It will be downgraded for the year just finishing, the financial year just soon to start. It is tough times. To be fair, the Australian economy is growing. There hasn't been a recession. There hasn't been, you know, some of the problems that people expected. But in part, that's been through very, very fast population growth. If you put the economy on a per person basis, it has been shrinking. And an even better measure of the pain is what's been happening to our living standards. Basically, wages have fallen behind what's happened to prices. Mortgage rates have shot up. The tax take, including out of pay packets, has shot up as well. That combination means living standards are notably down on where they were a couple of years ago. So a fair amount of pain.
We've had the latest inflation figures out today. Could you talk us through these and their implications?
They are ugly. So in the last 3 months, prices grew by 1%. Over the last year, they grew by a bit more than 3.5%. And that's, you know, yes, it's falling. It's not falling as fast as the Reserve Bank had predicted. You know, there'd been hopes from some people that there might be an interest rate cut sooner rather than later. I guess I've always thought that that was a pretty forlorn hope. But those numbers today tell you absolutely, you know, you are not getting a rate cut in Australia until the end of this calendar year at best. Markets, you know, which in recent weeks have switched to saying, well, we're not really going to get a rate cut out of the Reserve Bank in Australia until March. You know, that's likely to slip further. That's really important on a whole bunch of fronts. First, when I talked about the problems, you know, why Australians are as grumpy as they are, why consumer sentiment is weaker today than it was during COVID or during the global financial crisis, is if you think through, you know, wages haven't kept up with prices. Well, by definition, that's because of inflation. Interest rates have gone up a lot. Well, that's because of inflation. The tax take has gone up a lot. Again, that's because of inflation. You know, the good news is that unemployment hasn't gone up as much as people feared. But all those other things, the inflation and the interest rate and the tax impacts of that are all part of the rise in unemployment. Everything centres on inflation. The government would desperately, you know, it's got another surplus. It would desperately love to hand out money to help people around the cost of living pressures that inflation is generating for them. And it is doing, you know, it's more than $20 billion of tax cuts. But if they hand out more, and they would want to, there is a real risk that there would not be an interest rate cut at all ahead of the next election. And I think that is a key part of what's going to be exercising minds in Canberra in the next little while.
So do you think these latest inflation figures, which were a bit worse than the economists' forecast, will change the budget strategy in any way? And is inflation the most difficult challenge for the government looking to this budget, even though Jim Chalmers has been putting it really, although to the fore, among other challenges?
I do think it makes it harder. I do think it's central. The government would like to do all sorts of things. It would like not just to help people around cost of living. It would like to do things around its future Made in Australia agenda. There are all sorts of things it would like to do. And it's got the money, in a sense, or at least it's got the money today to do that. Again, and, you know, a comfortable surplus in the year just finishing. But that short-term constraint that if it hands out too much money, it loses any interest rate cut ahead of the election, that will, you know, so both the economics and the politics are jumping up and down and saying, be cautious in this budget. I'd have said that's true for a while, but I think, you know, it would be, you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who hasn't now joined those dots off the back of the inflation figures today. Inflation is central to the government's challenges, but it's also central to the difficulties of doing things around those challenges.
Often in budget making, we see a tension between a prime minister and a treasurer. It's hard to get information, I think, about the precise relationship between these two. But do you think at all that they're pulling in different directions, or are they both in the same cart?
And I definitely have no inside knowledge, but, you know, typically prime ministers are more worried about the short term, you know, the next opinion poll, let alone the next election. Treasurers tend to have a longer term view, at least in part because they want to be prime minister one day. And, you know, that's been true pretty much through our history. So treasurers have a longer term view. Treasurers, if you like, are typically the ones saying no or trying to say no to a prime minister who wants to spend money or to cut taxes. Historically, of course, also prime ministers win that battle. You know, the treasurers object, the prime ministers win the day anyway. There may have been, and again, this is a guess, there may have been an element of that around the future Made in Australia stuff. If I had to guess at Treasury's advice, it would be pretty cautious around that shift in industry policy. We know the Independent Productivity Commission, the new head there, has voiced some caveats around it. So yeah, you know, my guess is that in pretty much any government, as time goes by, you get more of a gap between the Treasurer and the Prime Minister. That would almost certainly be happening here. How much of a gap that is, I don't know. But as the politics and the economics of the juggle gets trickier, my guess is that those tensions are on the rise.
Well, of course, early in the term, we saw a pretty open difference between the Prime Minister and the Treasurer over recalibrating the tax cuts, and the Prime Minister said no then. But since then, of course, he's said yes. Can I go back to the point about the surplus? Even though the Treasurer says we're not there yet, it's quite clear that he's virtually admitted that there will be a surplus delivered in this budget. But the forward estimates have had deficits for future financial years. Do you think that, in fact, he'll be able to deliver surpluses going into the future?
No. So definitely surplus this year. But when you think of the range of things that make the future more expensive, they start in just 2 months with the very large tax cuts, again, more than $20 billion in terms of a yearly cost. And if the government does more over and above that, and it certainly wants to do a range of things, you know, that alone tends to remove the near-term impact of or chance of a surplus. But two other things, longer-term things. We know the cost of running Australia is rising. Part of that is defence. We got an update a week ago on the official guesses of some new policy costs there. The bottom line is that a more dangerous world is a more expensive world, and you are starting to see that in a range of policies. There was August last year, the government put a guess on it in its intergenerational report. It guessed that from the early 2030s onwards, Australia would be spending about 2.3% of national income every year on defence. Well, the update a week ago said that in a decade, that thought was 2.4%. Or in other words, yes, it's coming. Yes, it's expensive. And it gets more expensive still, or could well after that. So that's part of the longer-term challenge. The other one is the NDIS. The growth in the numbers there, much, much bigger than was expected when the NDIS first came in a decade ago. Neither side of politics has got on top of those costs. Partly the politics of getting on top of those costs are really tricky. Partly, of course, there are genuine reasonable rights, not merely of the disabled, but also of taxpayers. And the combination we're getting there is a tricky one. The government has done some things, including some good things, but the bulk of what it has done is simply to give the states some extra money, but on the proviso that the states hand back that extra money as a bigger share of NDIS costs. Or in other words, there's been a money go-round and a change in accounting. So the government will, in the budget, in the middle of the coming month, be able to say that the federal share of NDIS costs have gone down, but that will be not because we've had leadership. It will be because we've had accounting.
Now, we know from the Treasurer that the revenue upgrades that we've seen in earlier budgets won't happen again to the extent that they previously did. There'll be some boost to revenue compared with the earlier forecast, but it'll be modest. To what extent will this be a real constraint on spending?
It will be at some stage, not so much yet. You know, yes, things like iron ore prices are down, but they are also comfortably higher than the official numbers had them. You look at something like gold prices, you know, they're better than the official numbers. Well, not that we know what the official numbers are, but given that gold just hit a record high, you would expect that there's some upside there. Or in other words, that the massive improvement in the budget has had two elements. You can think of one of them as war. Basically, the price of the stuff that Australia sells to the world has gone up as a result of war and other developments. So we got a bigger pie that the government was able to tax, but that's not a permanent boost. So, you can argue when the marvellous tax revenues we're getting from iron ore and from a range of other things will slow down, but it has been a huge boost. The other thing that's happened is that inflation, if you can think of war, boosted the size of the pie that the government could tax. Inflation changed the shares of the pie. Inflation takes money away from families, gives it to businesses, and it really gives it to government. And so government's had big wins as a result of not the policies that it's changed. In fact, the actual government policy decisions, if you take this year as an example, the one finishing, if the government had done nothing since being elected, the budget would be $12 billion stronger. The surplus would be bigger this year because of things like, you know, childcare costs and things like that. So it's been a considerable windfall. That's what's changed the budget, bottom line, remarkably so. Now, the government has banked most of that enormous windfall, not all of it, but most of it, and that's allowed the budget to improve massively.
So this time, they're not going to bank as much of the windfall. They'll bank some, but not that overwhelming proportion previously banked. Is that a bad thing?
Look, I think it's a bad thing. If you think of what we're saying, you know, when the government gets lucky, when circumstances, when war and inflation, you know, mean the tax man ends up with more money, when there's good luck affecting the budget, the government is saying, well, you know, we won't fritter away all of the good luck. Now flip that on its head. At some stage, bad luck, you know, commodity prices will go down, inflation will go down, you know, the luck will turn against the budget at some stage. What does the government do at a time when there aren't revenue windfalls, but big revenue write-downs due to that change in economic circumstances? Well, at the moment, it's saying it's not going to bank all the windfalls, but does that mean it doesn't have, you know, enormous cuts when there are write-downs in revenues? They don't have a policy that works in both directions. They are doing a smaller version of the same mistake that was made by John Howard and Peter Costello when they had a big period of luck. You know, they didn't, Costello and Howard didn't spend all of it, but they spent the bulk of it. This government hasn't spent as much of the windfall, but in both cases, all you're doing is adding permanent promises off the back of temporary good luck. And that's just dumb because good luck is exactly that. Temporary.
We mentioned the new industry policy, and we know that that will be one theme of this budget. It's got considerable criticism. What's your view of it?
I can't say I'm a fan, or at least, you know, the world is changing very, very fast. That means there are new opportunities are opening up. But you've still got to look at those opportunities in terms of what could Australia be good at. And if you want to pick two examples that are around, one is green hydrogen. At some stage, you know, the ships and the planes around the world, they'll still use a liquid fuel, but it's going to be created in a environmentally sustainable way. And best guess is Australia can be really good at that. And right now, you know, the US and others are throwing big subsidies at their own sectors, and there is an argument. I'm kind of open to the thought that maybe Australia throws in a subsidy too, and the thought that by the time all the subsidies are done and dusted around the world, we would have a genuine advantage in this area, and that would show up as an ongoing sector. But you look at something like solar panels. And throwing money at that is just spectacularly dumb. That is just a waste of money. That is, you know, it's the equivalent of asking taxpayers to smoke $100 notes. I do worry that bits of the new industry policy are a little bit more around having announceables in some key marginal seats in Queensland, for example, than they are around good policy.
Now, just finally, Chris Richardson, the Prime Minister has signalled that we can expect another budget in March ahead of the election, which must be held by May. Despite this, do you think that on budget night we will be saying pre-election budget? Will that be the flavour of this budget, even if it's only the second last of the term?
I think that may have even been the intention of the government. But I think changing developments, you know, today's inflation numbers are an exclamation mark, but the trend has been there for a while. You know, inflation is proving sticky in some parts of the world, notably the US. Australia looks to be headed down the same path. And although the government would desperately like to be able to spend some of its surplus, I do think the key constraint, not just on the economy, but on the politics of the moment, is if the government does too much, then it may risk losing the chance of an interest rate cut ahead of the election. And there will be hardheads here in Canberra who are saying, well, you know, for all we would like to do this or that, we need to hold horses at the moment. Maybe, you know, circumstances will change down the track, but maybe a little bit of caution now is going to creep into the coming budget.
Well, we'll soon know whether the hard heads prevail. Chris Richardson, thank you very much for talking with us today. That's all for our Conversation Politics podcast for today. Thank you to my producer, Ben Roper. We'll be back with another interview soon, but goodbye for now.
Our theme music is by Lee Rosevier. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.